Thank you. Well, 3 months' notice what the preaching is, 3 or 4 months backwards when we started in August of last year to look just in August at 1 Samuel. And we looked then at, or you looked at the first 8 chapters back in August. And I'm not suggesting that you remember exactly what was said back in August. So we can't remember what we had for breakfast. I don't know about what we had for sermon last August. But it was a time, 1 Samuel is set in a time when there was no king in Israel, when everybody did their own thing. There was no king in Israel, it says in the last verse of the book of Judges, which is contemporary with Samuel. It's the same. So everyone was doing their own thing. Someone said it was a time of anarchy, really. People just rebelled. If they saw something and they wanted it, they took it. It was a time of apostasy. They were God said do this, but they did their own thing. They mingled with the other tribes. It was a time of apathy. There was no concern for God and his things. Everybody, it was a free-for-all. But that is about to change in 1 Samuel because it tells us how Israel got its first king. And Israel's first king was a man called... You've got Saul, David and Solomon to choose from. A man called Saul. That's right, a man called Saul. So just a little recap of these first 8, and it will be a little recap of these first 8 chapters. The first 8 chapters that we looked at in August concern Eli, the priest of Israel, and Samuel, the little boy Samuel, who grew up to be the prophet. And we remember Eli, the priest, at a place called Shiloh. He wasn't a particularly good... He did his best. He wasn't a particularly good priest, but his boys were rotters. You know, he wasn't the world's best, but his boys were Ophni and Phinehas. They took bribes. They were in it for the money, for what they could... There's not many become preachers for what they can get out of it. But he did. They did. Well, they took. In fact, it says they not only took money, they took the women as well. They were actually taking the women and sexually they were abusing the women there. Chapter 2 and verse 12 of this first book that we're looking at now, it says they had no regard for the Lord. They had no regard for God whatsoever. They were rotters, these two lads. Eli himself, you remember the story, as we just pause and reflect, he was sat by the temple there when a woman came in one day, a woman called Hannah, and she desperately wanted a son. She wanted a child. She wanted a son. There was the hope that one day the Messiah would be born, the Saviour, the Deliverer. And she wanted her. It was regarded as a cause of shame if they weren't, if they were barren. But she was barren. She came into the temple and she prayed and she so wanted a son and God to answer her prayer. And she couldn't get the words. We were talking to Marge in the vestry. Sometimes when you're praying and you just can't get the words and you know, we're not talking to impress other people. You're just talking to God and... Sometimes we just can't get the words and her lips were moving, but she couldn't get the right word at the right... And Eli was watching this woman there. She'd come in from outside and her lips were moving. He couldn't hear anything. And he very critical lips he had. And he said, "You drunken, what are you doing coming in here?" And she said, no, she said, I'm not drunk. I'm not a wicked woman. And Eli, God bless him, he did... realized the error of his ways, and he did say, "Well, may God grant you." He realized, he backpedaled a bit. Message there for leaders, those in church leadership. You know, sometimes we can have a critical tongue. You know, before COVID, many churches. Well, I'll not go down that avenue. In my first church, many 50 years in Southampton. We had a lady, and she'd always sit right at the back on the left, just where you are, Michael, somewhere around there. But she always went to sleep, Michael. Jeff's told us he's been up since 3, so if he goes to sleep, we understand that. But And I was a young pastor in my 20s, you know, just setting out. And I was offended by this. I was offended. How dare she go to sleep when I'm the leader? You know, it's my name above the door. How dare she go to sleep? And I spoke to one of the deacons, and I said, "Oh, this woman, I've been watching her for a time or two, and for a week or so, and 2 or 3 weeks, and she always falls to sleep." And the deacon was called Alan, wasn't he? And Alan said to me, he said, "You know, Pastor, Mrs. Cornish, she was called, a very elderly lady. I better not say how old in case I offend anybody here, but she was." And she said she looks after her older sister all, and she just comes for an hour's respite on a Sunday morning. And it does. I said, "Well, God bless her. It would do her good having an hour's kip, wouldn't it?" Listening to me rather than. But you could see I was quick. And in elite leadership, there's a problem like that. I was going to say before COVID, you know, when churches used to have two services, and always an SMO, Sunday morning only. Don't come out on a night time. Don't come out to the Tuesday night Bible school and prayer meeting or whatever. You know, we can be critical. We don't know people's circumstances, do we? And Eli didn't know this woman's circumstance, that she was so desperate to have a child. And as I say, he realized his mistake and said, "Well, God bless you. May it happen to you as the may you have this child that you've been." And she did. She had a child in the fullness of time. She had this child, this little boy Samuel, and she was good to her promise, and she said, "If I have a child, I will give him back to the Lord." And so this little baby Samuel, well, when he was weaned, when he was 2, 3, 4 years of age, he was brought back to Shiloh, to Eli in the temple, and he grew up with Eli the priest looking after Samuel, and Samuel ministered to him, and he grew up in that way. So Eli, when Eli died, this boy, now a young man, Samuel, became responsible for the affairs of Israel. You looked then, he led them against the Philistines in war, and in 1 Samuel chapter 7, he called the people. The Philistines were good fighters, and in chapter 3 they had a battle, and 8,000. In chapter 7 they lost 14,000. Big numbers were lost in battle of God's people. And Samuel had now grown up in the temple, and he became responsible for leadership, and he said, "Let's have a prayer meeting. We can't manage this on our own. He called them all to prayer, and he called them all to unity. He said, "Let's all gather together at this place called Mizpah, and let's get rid of any idolatry. Let's confess our sins." And he called them all together at Mizpah, and he prayed, he interceded to the Lord, 1 Samuel chapter 7, and he prayed. And you know, that day the Lord, the Bible, thundered with a great thunder, and God, the Bible word says, discomfited the Philistines. The Israelites had a wonderful victory against the Philistines, and Samuel set up a stone, the Ebenezer stone, in chapter 7. A stone between these two places, Mizpah and Shen, and he called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, "Hitherto hath the Lord helped us." And the idea was that every time the people walked by and they saw that stone, they would say, "Ah, yeah, the Lord fought for us. Great victory." You know, like we have cenotaphs. Now, not every time we walk by the village cenotaph, we remember, "Ah, yeah, they fought for us," but it's just there as a stone of remembrance. And that's what we looked at, or you looked at, in Ebenezer. Then in chapter 8, we're almost getting there to where we should be today. Samuel himself is now getting on in years. He's now getting, it's time for his successor. It's time for a successor to Samuel to be appointed, really. But history repeats itself. Can you believe it? Just as Eli's boys were rotters, listen to chapter 8 in the first 3 verses. It says, "When Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as judges. The name of the first was Joel." God was in his name, Joel. "The name of his second was Abijah, and they served in Beersheba." Beersheba if we were to look at Israel as being England, Beersheba was the tip of Cornwall. Samuel put them out of the way, really. Put them right down. They weren't in Birmingham, in the centre of the... They were right down. Samuel knew that they weren't the world's best. And it says, verse 3, his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain again, and they accepted bribes, and they perverted justice. Oh dear. So look what happened, verses 4 and 5. All the elders of Israel gathered, and they came to Samuel, and they said, you're old now, Samuel. Your sons don't walk in your ways. Now give us a king to lead us, such as all these other nations have. Samuel tried to warn them. He said, if you have a king, you'll regret it. You won't like it. Yeah, a king will get taxes from you. He'll impose national service for you. It'll be, in fact, verse chapter 8 and verse 11. Listen to this, and I'll emphasize one word. Chapter 8 and verse 11, Samuel warned them. He said, if you have a king, he will take your sons to serve. Verse 13, he will take your daughters. Verse 14, he will take the best of your fields. Verse 15, he will take a tenth of your harvest. He will take, verse 16, he will take your servant. Verse 17, he will take your flock. But verse 19, the people refused to listen. And now we get the real reason why they asked for a king. Verse 20, as Jeff said in his introductory remarks, then we shall be like all the other nations. We want to be like the other nations and have a king. And that's when the Lord said, verse 22, give them a king. Give them what they want. All that by way to set the scene. All right. And now for February, for the next four Sundays, this Sunday and the four Sundays of February, we're going to look at chapter 9 today, chapter 10, 11 and 12 over the next 4 weeks. The early days of Saul as king, and in these early days he was pretty good. He turned out bad at the end, but in these early chapters he was pretty good with Saul, it has to be said. So today's title, if you like, God's Hand in Small Things, a story of the small circumstances, if you like, leading to how Saul is chosen, how he became the first king, how the first king is appointed. Little things, little insignificant, circumstantial, seemingly, how they all fit together, how we see God's hand in it. So chapter 9, verses 1 and 2, it says, there was a Benjamite, a man of standing, whose name was Kish, and it was the son of all these men that Barry very craftily got out of repeating. Son of a few Welshmen, you should have said. Son of all these, and all this begetting and all the rest of it, but just to say that they were... But that's unimportant. The important thing is that verse 2 says, he had a son, Kish had a son named Saul, an impressive young man without equal among the Israelites, a head taller, a handsome, tall... If only we had a visual aid up here, up front, to show you this on. A handsome... I'm so glad Darren's come as well from... It reminded me of Worcester, because every time Worcester is mentioned in railway terms, I say hallelujah. I'll tell you why. Because we have to cover every incident that happens on the railway, and when anything happens nasty on the railway, Worcester Foregate Street, I have a colleague, and I think... Let David cover that. Let David do all the spade work. Is it Ashchurch, where the mobile operation manager, the mom? And I think, so it's good to be reminded of Worcester. But he was this man, Saul, a tall man, a handsome man, a young man. And as a little aside, it often happens the case when people are, they sometimes have a shy complex as well. I suppose because they're a bit taller, they stand out, and so they do sometimes. In fact, when he's told that he's going to be king, Barry read this for us in verse 21. He said, I'm just a Benjamin. I'm just from the smallest tribe, Benjamin. I'm a nobody. He said, I'm from the smallest tribe, and my clan is the least, and my family is just, I'm a nobody. He was trying to get out of it. And in fact, if we look forward to next week, when they came to making him king in chapter 10, listen to this. He went AWOL. I mean, that's what happened. At his coronation, he went missing. Fancy that. We've just had the coronation of King Charles, haven't we? It's got all the pomp and ceremony and all the dignitaries and all the mothballs and all the, you know, and the carpets on and painted and everything. And where's the king? Where's the... That's what happened with Saul. When it came to his chapter 10, this is next week, really. I'm giving you next week's secrets. What does it say, verse 20? When Samuel brought all the tribes of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin was finally Saul was chosen. And they said, has the man come here yet? They inquired of the Lord, has he came? And the Lord said, yes, but he has hidden himself among the baggage. He was in the supplies. He was in the storehouse. He'd hidden away. But that's next week. So back to our chapter. Here he is, verse 21, a Benjamite, the smallest tribe, the smallest clan. He is a nobody from nowhere. He's not from the big city of Biddeford or Westwood. Oh, he's from Abbotsham. He's from Higher Clovelly. You know, he's just, you know, we'd never heard of these. Probably a little bit of false modesty about his protesting, really, because we discovered in verse 1 of our chapter 9 that his father was a man of standing, actually. His father was a man of standing, a man of substance. There was a man, Benjamite, a man of standing, whose name was Kish. He's putting himself down, but the reality is, in verse 2, he was an impressive, handsome, young, tall man from a rich family. He was the people's choice. The people wanted him. And we need to say, yes, God does use rich, influential, tall, dark and handsome people, but he also uses us common peoples, if you forgive me for using that phrase. Yes, we thank God for those who have money, who are rich, who are influential, who are on television, you know, who the movers and shakers, but he also uses us, people from Abbotsham, from down North Devon, chucked away. He uses people like us. But in fact, the truth is the people would have done better seeking God's will. Right? It was the people's choice, but they should have really asked. They should have prayed the Lord's Prayer, really. They should have said, thy will be done. Give us your choice and not ours. Well, here we are. Saul's father Kish, a man of standing, but verse 3 tells us his donkeys had gone away. The donkeys belonging to Saul's father Kish were lost. So Saul's father said to Saul, take a servant and try and find these, go looking for the donkeys. Now it's recorded for us where they went. And Barry told us it's a geography lesson. Well, it's not, they're meaningless names to us, aren't they really? It is a bit of a, unless we had a map up there. But they went to the hill country, northwest of the Dead Sea. If you wanted to be specific, the hill, these unpronounceable villages to the northwest, and I suppose the bigger places were Bethlehem and Jerusalem. It was that sort of area of Ephraim, but they're in the hills for 3 days. We know it was 3 days because verse 20 tells us when the donkeys were found. The prophet says, well, the donkeys that you've been looking for 3 days. So we knew that they were lost for 3 days. Wow. Donkeys gone for 3 days. It's a needle in a haystack. That was nearly a needle in a haystack, wouldn't it? But it was a needle in a haystack. Spoonerisms. Have you come across spoonerisms? Do you know what I'm talking about? When you say, well, I just said, instead of a needle in a haystack, you take the first letter and you say a needle in a haystack. Our English master at school, he went round and he did all the girls. We were just called by surnames, Thorpe, but all the girls. And he went through them all And everybody was, well, there were two people. One was all right, and she was Susan Smith, because the S and the S just changed. But we had Pat Royston, and she became rat poison. That's nothing to do with the sermon, but there we are. I've lost my... Looking for a needle in a haystack. These donkeys have gone off missing. And there we then gone for 3 days trying to find these... until verse 5 tells us they came to another meaningless place called Zuph. Z-U-P-H. They came to a little village up in the hills, northwest of the Dead Sea by Jerusalem, and Zuph. They came to, I'm trying to think of someone round here, house, Parkham or somewhere. Oh, Gwendy's, what's the relation? Trevor Gray's granddaughter's been, or grandchild has been dedicated, so that's why Gwendy in here today, because they're having a dedication service at Westwood. But it went to some of these outlandish places, Wolfhard is Worthy, or so, you know, these places, and they, nobody's heard of, and they came to this place that nobody's heard of called Zuph, meaningless name, until you think, chapter 1 and verse 1, 1 Samuel says there was a man from Zuph, a man called Elkanah, whose wife was Hannah, the father of Samuel. Zuph, that's where they come to. It was where Samuel lived. One of Saul's good qualities, apart from being tall and young and handsome and rich and shy, but a good quality, another good quality, was that he was quite a sensitive lad, really. He was quite sensitive, and he says in verse 5, he says this, when they reached Zuph, Saul said to his servant who was with him, come, we'd better go back, because my father will stop thinking about the donkeys, and he'll start worrying about us. He'll think we're lost, or worse. That's a good point, really, quite sensitive. Worrying about those left behind. But the servant said in verse 6, look, here in Zuph, there lives a man of God. Let's just go on a little bit further and see if he can help us. It can't do any harm. Let's give it a try. Now, the rule was, the custom was, when you went to you always took a gift, really. You know, you see a poster in the supermarket, lost cat reward offer. You know, you give something. You know, the donkeys are lost, we want your help, and here's a little something for you. But verse 7 tells us, I'm rushing on now, verse 7 tells us that they'd run out of money, their food had run out, and it was then that the servant put his hand in his pocket and he found a small coin. Verse 8 says, verse 8 says, the servant answered, look, he said, I found a quart silver, I'll give it to the man so that he will tell us which way to take. He said, we've run out of money, but as it happens, he said, I just found in the turnip of his trousers. Remember those days, in the turnip of your trousers, when you'd find a penny? He just happened to find, if they thought they'd got nothing left, but he just found this quarter of a shekel, this small. And they said, look, let's go and see. And just as they were going in, coming out of the village, coming out of the town, were some girls to draw some water. Jack and Jill went up the hill, but these girls were coming down the hill to get their water. And this is what they said in verse 11, as they were going down, as they were going up to the town, up the hill, they met some girls coming out to draw water, and they said, is the prophet here? Is the seer here? Is the man of God here? And they said, yes, he is. Verse 12, he's hurry now, he's just come out, he's just come to town today, you just picked the right day, he's coming to make a sacrifice. As you enter the church, as you enter the town, you'll find him before. Have you asked directions to anybody? And they say, oh yeah, you can't miss him. you can't miss it. Well, it just happened that as they were going in, these were coming out, and they said, is the prophet here? Yet, just as it happened, just as luck would have it, he's here today. Oh, you're in luck today. The prophet is here. If you go now, you'll find him. He's just there. Hurry, look sharp. And the verse tells us, verse 14, that as they went up to the town, and as they were entering, there was Samuel coming toward them on his way. Now, we're just going to pause there as I bring things to a close. I know there's lots more verses in here, but I've only prepared the first half because there's a lot in this chapter. And so we get into the beginning of the end of the sermon, if you like. Oh, Winston Churchill, remember that? Winston Churchill died 60 years ago on the 31st of January. How about that? 60 years, where have they gone by? And in his gravelly voice he said, this is not the beginning of the end, this is the end of the beginning. War's going to continue, he said in his, well, my sermon's about to end. This is the beginning of the end of the sermon. And the beginning of the end of this sermon is, was all this coincidence? Was it all coincidence that, what have we said, as was it providence of God? Was God's hand in it all? Were all the jigsaw pieces fitted together? The donkeys were lost, so go and search. Go up the hill, just as the girls were coming down the hill. Got a coin, you thought you got no money, but yeah, you just happened to find that small... Was it all coincidence that it happened, that Samuel just happened to be there on that day? They were at the right time, at the right place. They found the silver coin, they met at the entrance. There's a lot more in this chapter how God was working on Samuel as well. He'd revealed himself to Samuel, he'd revealed his will to Samuel, he told him to go and meet Samuel, told him where the donkeys were to be found. God told him the exact place. Chapter 10 and verse 2 tells us they're going to be found near Bethlehem. By Rachel's, I know exactly where they are. What three words? By Rachel's well. That's where they're going to be found. They're there. That's what it says in chapter 10 and verse 2. Near Rachel's tomb. Not well. Near Rachel's monument. Was all this by chance? Or was God in these small things that all pieced together? Each detail brings Saul and Samuel to the precise place. With God, things don't just happen. Everything by him is planned. And let me say that God knows the details of your life as well. And he knows the details of my life. In fact, every detail is known to God. God knows why that happened in your life and in mine. God knows why you were led in this direction. And it's only as we look back, we can see that all the way the Saviour leads us, we can see God's hand. Like the Hebrew language, it's best if you read, you can only read it backwards, because they write it back to front, really. So it's only as you look back, when you came to that crossroads in life and took this path, when you just had enough money for this particular, when you ended up at Abbotsham Baptist Church, through circumstances, little things, someone invited you, you met somebody, you picked up a flyer, or whatever, was it by chance? Or was God's hand in it all? Let me just say that in the second half, Samuel asked Saul and his servant to come to a feast. And he gives Saul a place of honour at this feast, at the head of the table. And you know, he gives him, verse 24 tells us, he gives him the biggest piece of meat that there is. Samuel is going to honour Saul. And in chapter 9 of verse 24, it says this: so the cook took the leg, the thigh, and set it in front of Saul. He had a whole leg of to himself. He had the biggest pea, you know, there was something special. And so Samuel said, tell your servant to go. I want a private word with you, Saul. In fact, he said in verse 27, I've got a message from God just for you. Message from God. Verse 27, let me read that. As they were going down to the edge of the town, Samuel said to Saul, tell your servant to go on ahead. And the servant did so. You stay here a while, so that I will give you a message from God. And it's on that cliffhanger that the chapter ends. And I'm not going to... That's the comeback next week. I've never watched East End. I've watched Coronation Street and I've watched Emmerdale Farm, but I've never watched... Apparently EastEnders, when it goes boom, 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 and there's a dramatic music. Well, this ends on a dramatic point. It said, I've got a message. You'll have to come back next week. Or better still come back next week, but read chapter 10 in the meanwhile and find out what that message was. We're bang on time, but I've just got a little video that I've been told I've got 30 seconds to get Nick ready to give this video. And I think it's only 2 or 3 minutes. But for those who did go to sleep, this will tell you what I've said. All right?
Samuel anoints Saul as king. Samuel led and advised the people of Israel according to God's laws. He always asked God what he should do. When he grew old, he appointed his sons Joel and Abijah as the new leaders. Joel and Abijah ruled from Beersheba, but instead of following God's laws, they were dishonest and accepted bribes. People started complaining about this injustice. So the elders of Israel gathered together to meet Samuel at Ramah. "You are old and your sons do not follow your ways," they told Samuel. "Give us a king like the other nations." Samuel was displeased but prayed to the Lord. The Lord told him, "It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king." Samuel warned them of the consequences of choosing a king. "A king will take your sons, put them in his army, others will work his fields or as craftsmen for him. Your daughters will be taken to become his perfumers, cooks, and bakers. A king will take a tenth of your grain and flocks, and you will become his slaves. When you cry out to be rescued from the king, the Lord will not deliver you." The people refused to listen and demanded, "Give us a king like the other nations who will lead us and fight our battles." Samuel repeated what the people said to the Lord. The Lord replied, "Listen to them and give them a king." So Samuel said to the Israelites, "Everyone go back to your own town." There was a man from the tribe of Benjamin called Kish, who had a son called Saul. Saul was a handsome young man who was a head taller than everyone else. Kish had lost his donkeys and asked Saul to take a servant and search the hill country to find them. Saul and his servant searched for the missing donkeys, but could not. Saul wanted to return home, but his servant said, "There is a highly respected man of God in this town. Perhaps he will tell us what way to take." As they went up to the town, they met Samuel. He was on his way to the high place where he worshipped God. "The day before, God had about this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him ruler over the people of Israel. He will deliver them from the Philistines." Saul asked Samuel, "Can you tell me where the prophet's house is?" "I am the prophet," Samuel replied. "Come with me to the high place, then eat with me and return home tomorrow. As for the lost donkeys, they have been found. The nation is turning to you and your family line." "But I am from the smallest tribe and my clan is not important," Saul protested. Samuel invited Saul and 30 guests to a meal and later talked with him on the roof of his house. The next morning, as Saul and his servant set off, Samuel asked the servant to go on ahead as he had a message from God to give Saul. When they were alone, Samuel took a flask of olive oil and poured it on Saul's head. "The Lord has chosen you to be ruler over his land." He then told Saul of 3 things that would happen to him. At the oak tree of Tabor, he would meet 3 men on their way to Bethel who would give him 2 loaves of bread. At Gibeah, he would meet a group of prophets worshiping God. The Spirit of the Lord would come to Saul with power and he would prophesy with them. At Zelzah, he would be told by a man that his father's donkeys had been found. These things all happened as Samuel said. When he arrived at Gibeah, a procession of prophets met him. The Spirit of God came powerfully upon him, and he joined in their prophesying. "What is this that has happened to the son of Kish?" people asked. "Is Saul now a prophet?" Samuel called the people of Israel together. By drawing lots, the tribe of Benjamin was selected, then the clan of Saul, then Saul himself. But he was nowhere to be found. They asked the Lord where he was, and the Lord revealed that Saul was hiding among the supplies. They ran and brought him out. He stood a head taller than everyone else. Samuel announced, "Do you see the man the Lord has chosen? There is no one else like him." Then the people shouted, "Long live the king." Samuel explained the rights and duties of kingship to everyone and wrote them down on a scroll. The people went home, but not everyone was pleased. Some grumbled, "How can this man help us?" They despised Saul and would not bring gifts to acknowledge him as their king. If you like this video, give it a thumbs up. Share and leave a comment. Subscribe.
Subscribe, give us your money, give us your money. I told you, you have to bring a little gift, even if it's a quarter of a shekel. But sermon spoiler, really, a sermon because next week Samuel anoints Saul. Number 22 is our hymn, "All the Way the Saviour Leads Me." number 22.